Blue light illuminates the title, Intermedia. A bright red flame flickers from left to right, the logo of BBC Films. Against a background of skyscrapers at night, the words Miramax Films. BBC Films, Intermedia Films, Miramax Films present A Mirage Enterprises, Robert Fox, Scott Rudin production of a Richard Eyre film. Spiky green leaves sway gently underwater. Judi Dench. Jim Broadbent. And Kate Winslet. In slow motion, a shadowy figure glides through the water. A young woman swims naked in the milky depths of a river. Iris. A second shadowy figure appears. A young man, prematurely balding, wearing vest and underpants, swims behind the young woman. For a moment they move forward, still underwater, swimming strongly side by side. Turning, they stretch out their arms towards each other and link hands. Drawing closer, the young couple kiss. Feathery green weeds move gently in the current. Now, a middle-aged woman in a black one-piece bathing suit glides confidently under the water. Wearing vest and underpants, a balding man with thinning white hair swims towards her. She smiles at him, and bubbles rise as she tries to say something.
I want to.
He answers her. They reach out and grasp each other's hands. Sunlight filters down towards them as they rise together towards the surface. An elderly woman writes with a fountain pen. Edward Lanman was sitting in his pleasant house in London. The sun was shining. It was an early morning in June, not quite... She pauses and gives a deep sigh. A young couple cycle at speed down a country lane.
Iris! Iris, wait for me!
Just keep tight hold of me and it'll be all right!
You won't keep still!
I can't keep still!
I can't catch up with you!
Speed up!
Oxford colleges are silhouetted against a night sky. Two figures ride bicycles through the dark city.
Iris, you've got bicycle oil on your ankle.
I don't care, John.
Oh.
Those of you are guests on whose magnificent generosity we depend. We really are most frightfully grateful. We'll need no introduction to one of our most distinguished graduates and an honorary fellow, Dame Iris Murdoch. She's a noted philosopher as well as author of some 26 novels, and we're honored to have her with us today, as well as the distinguished Wharton Professor of Literature, who has the great good fortune of being married to her. I need to say no more about her, for good wine needs no bush, but she will not mind comparison with, say, a really fine vintage claret. Dame Iris will speak to you about the importance of education.
Dame Iris, a middle-aged woman, rises and looks around the college dining hall.
Education doesn't make you happy, and nor does freedom. We don't become happy just because we're free, if we are, or because we've been educated, if we have, but because education may be the means by which we realize we are happy. It opens our eyes, our ears, tells us where delights are lurking, convinces us that there is only one freedom of any importance whatsoever, that of the mind, and gives us the assurance, the confidence, to walk the path our mind, our educated mind, offers. I shall tell him all my love, all my soul's adoration, and I think he will hear me and will not say me nay. It is this that gives my soul all its joyous elation, as I hear the sweet lark sing in the clear air of the day.
The past.
Yes, of course there's something fishy about describing people's feelings. I try hard to be accurate, but as soon as you start to define such and such a feeling, language lets you down. It's really a machine for making falsehoods. When we really speak the truth, words are insufficient. Almost everything except things like pass the gravy is a lie of a sort. And that being the case, I shall shut up. Owen, pass the gravy.
As the diners rise from the table, a young man tops up his wine glass.
Once it's recognised, has the stamp of the Induke.
Ah, John. I may call you John, mayn't I? Meet Miss Murdoch. Iris, my dear, John Bailey, one of the more promising young lecturers in the English school. Though I caught him out over Old English grammar, his weaker side, I fear. A minor question of Anglo-Saxon syntax. But it's true nowadays of most of
the I mean, went down the wrong way.
Yes, I like that. There is a right way down, of course. Amazing how most of us find it without even thinking about it.
I rarely think.
If you think about it, you'll never find it. Best thing to do is hang on and trust the body. I do.
Human beings love each other. In sex, in friendship, and when they're in love.
A lecture hall.
And they cherish other beings. Humans, animals, plants, even stones. The quest for happiness and the promotion of happiness is in all of this. And the power of our imagination.
The past.
I'm writing a novel. I don't suppose you have the time or the inclination to even read a novel.
I've written one. It's going to be published. And I'm writing another.
Oh. Can I read it?
No one has read it. None of my friends.
What's it about?
About? Something for everyone.
A bit like Shakespeare.
Perhaps, yes. Please don't talk to anyone about it.
No. Of course not. I won't tell a soul.
Iris's fountain pen covers page after page. The lecture hall.
Every human soul has seen, perhaps even before their birth, pure forms, such as justice, temperance, beauty, and all the great moral qualities which we hold in honour. We are moved towards what is good by the faint memory of these forms, simple and calm and blessed, which we saw once in a pure, clear light, being pure ourselves.
A supermarket.
Whole grain. Do we have whole grain or something other?
Oh, what is whole? Something in itself. What does it have parts? Oh, spaghetti.
If you have a hole, you have a hole. Oh, sausages. You and me is a hole. If you toddle off, there's a hole in the hole, or if I do.
But a hole can't be broken. It just forms another hole. Baked beans.
Baked beans.
Do you want premium points?
Do we deserve them?
Do you want bags?
Bags, yes. You know, it's all around us, people like you and me talking nonsense.
Oh, I know.
Bag for life.
For life?
That's what it says. We have to ask. Give you the choice?
Oh, rather.
You just have to listen. That's the job.
Call it a job, but it's like music, what you do. You live with the angels, speak their language, the music of the stairs. Nowadays, the only language anyone really understands is pictures. Paint the picture.
In the car park.
See, now I'm bagged for life.
Love's the only language everyone understands.
Oh, love, yes. I can read it, but I can't speak it.
In the pub, John carries drinks, holding a packet of snacks between his teeth.
My coat caught on your chair.
Iris smiles as he untangles himself. He drops the packet of snacks onto the table.
Captain says the two weevils dropped out of the biscuit. Which would you rather have, Mr. Smith?
The bigger one, sir.
Wrong, Mr. Smith, wrong. In the Navy, we should always choose the lesser of the two weevils.
Patrick O'Brien, between two evils, always choose the one you haven't tried before.
Mae West. Oh, my vest. I tore my vest again this morning.
You must get some new vests.
Jolly good.
You must get some new vests. I just said that.
You're always saying that you just said something. Me too. Good job you reminded me. I had two lectures today.
You remembered?
No, but I remembered to apologize for the one I forgot. They were very sweet about it.
Glad not to have to listen to you, I expect.
Oh, I'm sure. They'd have been delighted to have listened to you. I always have been.
The past. Young John waits anxiously in the street under a large umbrella. A taxi draws up.
Iris!
John!
She pays the driver. Iris and her friends hurry through the gateway into the college building. Iris is wearing a bright red dress. John looks awkward as they move around the crowded dance floor. As Iris spins around, a man takes her hand and draws her away. John dances with the dark-haired woman in front of him.
Thank you!
You too!
That was my husband.
John looks anxious.
Are you with Iris?
Hoping so.
You know we have?
I thought we had.
Nearly met.
Are you a friend of Iris?
Yes.
She seems to have a lot of...
Iris is spinning around, covering her face with her red stole.
Janet Sturgeon! John Bailey!
How do you do?
How do you do? Shall we?
What are your rooms like?
Adequate, thank you.
I'd like to see them.
Oh.
On the crowded staircase.
Do you have a lot of friends?
Is a list of my friends necessary?
I just wondered if you had many.
There aren't many people that one wants to know one. Do you want...
She slips.
Iris!
She lands at the bottom.
Use a mic for four. Would you like some champagne?
That would be nice.
I've had some since Christmas. It does keep, doesn't it?
In his room, John lights the gas fire.
I shouldn't be doing this. Having women in my room, it's not permitted.
I wouldn't say you'd had me, exactly.
Iris picks up a book.
Have you danced before?
It was all right, wasn't it?
Oh, I think so.
Broke the ice, so to speak.
Ice?
What?
Oh, it'll do. Aren't you particular about words at your college?
I'm only here on sufferance, really, as a tutor and guide. I get all the Americans and Frenchmen to mother. You love words, don't you?
One doesn't have words. How does one think? Shall I do that?
Indicating the champagne bottle.
What is your novel about?
About?
Putting her red stole over the lamp.
How to be free. How to be good. And how to love.
Well, that's all. All there is, I'd say. Well, language is all very well, you know, but it's not the only way of understanding each other. There's sight and smell and touch, of course.
He pours a second cup of champagne.
I love your nose.
It's snub.
Iris moves closer and looks up into his face. They rub noses.
Snubby. Snubby, snubby.
Snobby, snobby, snobby.
Iris looks at John curiously as he puts down his cup. Tentatively, he takes her hand and kisses it. As his kisses move up her bare arm, she gives a little smile.
Let me do that to you. Take off your jacket.
She puts down her cup. John removes his jacket and Iris helps him to roll up his shirt sleeve. She folds back the cuff. Gently, she begins to kiss his forearm.
If we were, as it were, married, we could do this all the time. Perhaps.
We should be doing it nearly all the time.
Yes, but...
Iris kisses him full on the lips.
Thank you.
The present. Lamplight falls on Iris as she writes at her desk. Exasperated, she crosses something out. She puts down her pen and sighs. Hearing a noise outside, she gets up. John joins her at the window.
Look.
A handsome fox stares up from the garden below.
I'm stopping you working.
Yes, well, I don't mind.
How's it coming along?
It's harder to write than all the others, Match. Have you noticed?
Just as you've seemed puzzled every now and again.
That's it, yes. Puzzled.
Writing it down.
Puzzled. It's a funny word.
All words are like that when you take them by surprise, aren't they? Have you got a title?
A lot of trees. Seen near.
A cat attacks the fox.
We must stop it.
The window!
We must stop it!
No, it's gone.
The fox has disappeared. Iris sits at the desk.
We all worry about going mad, don't we? How would we know? Those of us who live in our minds anyway. Other people would tell us. Would they, John?
The past. Young John removes his gown as he runs along a busy street.
Except the world.
Smoking a cigarette, Iris waves to him through a cafe window.
John Bailey.
As John enters the cafe, Iris's companion rises from the table, kisses her warmly on the lips, and turns to leave. John steps aside awkwardly as the young woman passes him. She has very short hair and wears a man's suit. He looks after her curiously, then joins Iris at the table.
Seen her for ages.
Oh, John, jolly good. Nice. Takes all sorts. Not that I... We're all men at St. Anthony's. Do like women? Do women like you?
You mean lesbians?
Yes.
Would it bother you if they did?
Oh, the same thing happens with me, with homosexuals, I mean.
And do you go to bed with them?
Lord, no.
At the college, they're all, as somebody once said to me, old-fashioned lesbians of the very highest type.
do you go to bed with them?
She draws on her cigarette. The present. Iris stands at the window looking down into the dark garden. Across the landing, John looks up from his typewriter. He watches through the open door as Iris turns and sits down at her desk. She starts to write. The fountain pen moves slowly. She crosses out word after word. She tries again, then lifts the pen from the paper. Looking up, she notices that John is watching her anxiously. She turns away, putting her hand to her mouth. The past. Standing in the street at night, wearing a tweed cap and raincoat, young John stares up at a lighted window, at the silhouette of a couple kissing. The woman slips off the man's jacket, and they sink down out of sight. Crossing the wet road, he looks up again at the window, then hurries into the house. Inside, he quietly approaches a closed door. He opens it a crack. As young John peers into the room, his eyes widen in dismay. The present. Iris stares uneasily at the papers on her cluttered desk. The past. Young John closes the door and stumbles out into the street looking distressed. The present. John watches Iris just sitting at her desk. She sees him, but turns away. The past. A young man comes out of the front door and walks away. Young John goes into the house. The present. Iris walks into the foyer of BBC Television Centre.
Dame Iris. It's this way.
She's written philosophy and plays and poetry, but her novels are her lasting literary legacy. Iris Murdoch is acknowledged as the foremost English novelist of her generation.
A little excessive, don't you think?
What do you reckon? Shall I take that again? Her novels embrace the subjects of freedom and what it means to be good. And they are all studies in the successes and failures of love.
Iris sees her youthful self on a bank of monitors.
Poetry, but her novels are her lasting literary.
People, of course, are very secretive. And for many reasons want to appear what we call ordinary. Everybody has thoughts they want to conceal. Perhaps even quite simple aspects of their lives. People have obsessions and fears and passions which they don't admit to. I think any character is interesting and has extremes. It's the novelist's privilege to see how odd everyone is.
In your novels, you yourself are very exact in your use of language. But in general terms, do you think the language is becoming debased?
Reading and writing and the preservation of language and its forms and the kind of eloquence and the kind of beauty that language is capable of is something terribly important to human beings because this is connected to thought. If children are not taught
in the control room, the producer looks up in alarm.
What did you say? Did you ask?
I was asking about the importance of language.
Iris looks completely blank. She can find nothing to say. Later, as a red bus hurtles past, Iris stands on the pavement looking confused. Now she hurries along a crowded platform.
John! 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 John!
Iris!
John!
He runs downstairs.
Oh, you're there.
What is it?
I'm back.
Much earlier than I thought.
Yes, I came straight back. I didn't know why I was there.
You were going to do an interview.
Well, what interview?
I don't know.
So,
And see your publisher?
So...
What did your publisher?
So I came back.
I didn't expect you back for ages.
She rang.
I didn't answer.
Is Nora?
Iris, Nora's dead.
Oh, so she is.
Oh, that is sad. Oh, well, never mind. Must have been Ed. What for? Oh, yes, my book. Oh, so I came back.
A young man questions Iris.
What is, the name of the Prime Minister?
She looks up at John, then back at the young man.
Oh, me? Are you asking me?
Yes, I am. I know. Okay, what is the name of the Prime Minister?
I don't know. Ask John. Surely it doesn't matter.
Okay, well, no, not really.
Someone will know.
The young man speaks to John.
Who would you like to see? I mean, is there anyone?
I don't know.
Shall I look up some names? Talk to someone?
Got a lot of ideas, but they won't come together. It happens all the time, forgetting names.
Iris goes into the kitchen.
So, does it happen all the time? I mean, you know, does she mean writer's block? I suppose she does, but...
Iris can always write to Doctor. This is some...
Oh, I know.
Iris is a person...
Yes, but it isn't... It doesn't work like...
Surely, in her case, a woman with first-class mind...
We'll have to be certain. There'll have to be tests, scans. Well, I don't think I can... I mean, it's a little beyond my competence.
Iris finds her new book very tiring and difficult.
Basically, I'll arrange something.
Iris has a very clear mind. Mine's a muddle, but not hers. She does everything, always has. Food, shopping, tickets for things. I never know how she manages and does her books as well.
Well, they can get you help.
Nobody would suit.
Well, there's a very good place, a specialist nursing home, Vale House.
Not necessary.
Oh, not yet.
Not your fault, sir.
Well, take care.
Goodbye, Doctor. Thank you.
The doctor leaves.
Iris!
I'm sure the country won't go to the dogs. Not knowing the Prime Minister's name's not a capital offence.
Absolutely.
I know the names that matter.
It'll be all right.
Well, it will be if you stop worrying. I've got a book to finish. Oh, Tony Blair. So there.
A scanning machine.
Iris, are you comfortable? I'm going to start the scan now. Just keep nice and still. Try to relax. It'll take about 15 minutes.
Iris lies with her eyes closed as the machine scans her brain. Underwater, young Iris swims naked in the river. Lying in the scanner, Iris opens her eyes. A dark-haired woman hurries into the hospital.
John!
Yes.
I'm sorry. Is Iris still... I'm so sorry I'm late.
I don't know what's going to happen, Jess.
I've left the car outside.
The engine's running. Won't be a moment.
Right.
See you out there.
Yes.
When Janet returns, she sees John and Iris walking slowly towards her down the corridor. Iris is moving as if in a trance, staring straight ahead. Janet waits for them anxiously.
John, I'm frightened.
Everyone's doing their best. Janet's got the car. It'll be...
He pats Iris's hand. At home, John carries two glasses into Iris's study.
It's done.
You're finished? I thought you were close.
So far, the... hasn't made any difference.
Here's to it.
Handing her a glass.
Try and keep working.
You must.
I will.
Here's to the next one.
Just keep working, keep talking, keep the words coming.
Keep at it.
I shall come on like a deprived animal if I can't write. But like a starved dog.
No. Keep at it. I'll keep you at it.
I feel as if I'm sailing into darkness.
At the hospital... A picture of a spoon.
Sinewitwis.
The word animal.
Animal.
A screwdriver.
Toothbrush. No. Yes.
The word portrait.
Portrait. No.
A tennis racket.
Tennis thing.
The word dog.
A god.
Iris is getting tired, I'm afraid.
John?
Can we have the blinds? Jim, Iris, thank you very much. Thank you.
Down the course.
Dame Iris, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, Bruce.
It's so kind of you to come, Dame Iris.
Thank you, I like it. Thank you very much.
Is it any help?
Well, to us, yes. It's implacable.
What does that mean?
It means inexorable.
I know what the word means. To me, to us.
You see, words have meant everything to her. They will still mean something, some thought. It can't just be dead birds dropping.
I know what it means, and it doesn't surprise me. Mm. It frightens me, but then sometimes it doesn't frighten me, and that's just as bad, because that's it winning, isn't it?
No, it's not. It won't win.
It will win.
There, it will win. That's very kind.
They walk slowly down the corridor. The country lane.
Iris! Iris, wait for me!
Just keep tight hold of me and it'll be all right!
You won't keep still!
I can't keep still!
No! I can't catch up with you!
Speed up!
No!
The present. In pouring rain, a postman runs from his van across the garden. Iris opens the door.
Oh, good morning.
Oh, no. I think it's the person who brings the post, John.
Yes, it is.
Yes.
John?
So sorry.
Thank you very much indeed.
So sorry.
Iris hides behind John as he signs for the package.
Go on.
He hustles her inside.
Don't
need a
postman.
Don't
repeat everything, puss.
Don't need a postman.
It's for you. It's your book.
What's that?
Your book.
Don't need a postman.
It's your book. Isn't it perfectly splendid? Why don't you look at it?
It's only the postman.
Iris follows John closely as he goes to the sink.
Stop nudging up to me like a water buffalo. I have a lot to do. Lots to do, Iris. See what I've done now? It's not your fault. Not your fault. Sorry.
It's only the postman.
Yes, all right. It's only the postman.
So sorry. It's lots to do.
She strokes his arm. Clutching her newly published book, she wanders aimlessly across the kitchen and stands staring at the closed door. John crosses the kitchen and opens the door for her. Iris still appears confused.
Which side do I go?
Gently, he ushers her out. Looking distraught, John takes a long, shuddering breath.
Ask me my three main priorities for government, and I tell you, education, education, and education.
John? Why does he keep saying that? What does he mean?
By what?
Education.
It means learning, everyone getting enough of it.
Why does he keep saying it?
Politicians have to keep repeating things to make themselves heard. They have to be like travellers eating sheep's eyes with the Bedouins. They have to do anything to make themselves liked.
Why does he want to eat a sheep's ear?
Did I turn it off?
No!
We can go for a swim tomorrow if it's not raining.
No.
Yes. You love water. When you swim, you love it. Swim is good for you.
When are we leaving?
Not today.
We're going to London?
No, we're going for a swim.
When are we leaving?
Not today.
When are we leaving?
Followed by John, Iris scrambles through a hedge. She strides out across a muddy green field towards the river. John hurries after her.
Iris! Iris, wait for me!
As he pulls down her skirt on the river bank, a couple pass by in a boat. The young man calls out,
"You dirty old man!
Hello!"
Iris steps into the river.
So, Iris, not with your socks on, your socks!
Wading out waist-deep, Iris looks down into the water, frowns and hesitates. Young Iris glides naked up to the surface. Young John is on the bank. Laughing, she pulls him into the water in his underwear. They kiss underwater, then scramble out onto the bank. From the opposite side of the river, a group of small schoolboys snigger with delight. Their teacher hurries them on, then pauses himself to gaze at young Iris's firm, bare buttocks. Young John rubs her dry with her petticoat. As she stretches her arms above her head, the watching teacher scurries after his class. She flicks the water from her petticoat. The present. Iris laughs as John splashes her. Sinking under the water, she sees herself young and naked swimming towards her. She panics and flails her arms about. John helps her out. Iris struggles with John as he tries to get her dressed.
That's it. Come on. No, Iris. Iris, look. Just put your head like this. Up. Let's get your head in. As soon as we've got your head in, Iris. Iris, as soon as we've got your head in, Iris. As soon as we've got... Come on. Put your head down.
Where's my petticoat?
Here.
Young John is holding the petticoat in his hand as Iris rings a doorbell.
You sure he's expecting me?
Smiling mischievously, she shakes her head. A suave young man with a moustache opens the door. He stares at John in surprise.
Morris, I brought John. You said I might.
Did I? And did you say you would? Yes. Well, come in. Morris, John.
John Bailey.
John pushes the petticoat into his pocket.
Isn't it hot?
Yes, it is. I've got just the thing will cool. I imagine your friend Morris is hoping to have his wicked will, is he?
Not today, is he?
Looking annoyed, Morris quickly divides the lobster into three.
You and I are much the same age, aren't we, John?
I think so. Does it matter?
No.
It's not important, is it?
What Morris means is that most of my other friends are older than me.
Much older. Yes, there's a very good reason for that, isn't there?
Is there? What?
She likes people with a bit of a past. She uses them, don't you?
No, I don't.
For your novel. Don't you, Iris?
No, I haven't read it.
Haven't you?
Neither have you, Morris, so don't play games.
Nobody has read it. Gentle lady hasn't yet bestowed her favour on anyone.
Iris doesn't like to talk about it. I know that, do Iris?
It's because it's full of people she knows. All these masters of thought you're so chummy with. Bound to be. You'll know. Isn't it, Iris?
No, it isn't, but you can think what you like. You know nothing about it. Nobody knows but me. And I'm not telling.
I thought it was a secret. I mean, I know Iris doesn't want it talked about.
Come on, Iris. I'm sure we'll all recognise ourselves.
I don't see how you... anyone can.
They won't.
I hate that sort of thing. I won't ever do it. I don't see the point of writing a novel that's autobiography. There's no fun in that.
They won't see themselves, you know. Don't people written about in novels always see themselves differently?
I'm sure they do.
Who was it who said, you can use anyone you like in a novel as long as you drop it in somewhere, that they're good in bed, even though...
They might not be.
She glances at Morris.
Evelyn Waugh.
And so to bed. Samuel Pepys.
So have you granted your favour to John? Told him who's in the novel?
We have other things to talk about.
Pushing the petticoat deeper into his pocket. The street.
No one has read my novel. No one but the publisher.
It doesn't matter. Well, no, it does matter. I feel let down. Am I not a part, some sort of small part of your life?
Reaching her lodgings, young Iris leans her bicycle against the wall and stands on the doorstep.
You were very gallant.
We're very stupid.
No, John.
He pulls her petticoat from his pocket and holds it out to her.
Will you come in?
Inside, he sees the remains of a meal.
Have you been entertaining?
Yes.
All these people. I just think I chose you for your obvious lack of... I mean, I thought that. I thought no competition. What's this?
A friend made it.
Oh, is she a cook, your friend?
No, he's a philosopher, but his real interests are cooking and telephones. I'd like you to read this.
She shows him a manuscript.
I was rather afraid you might not like it.
Thank you.
She takes his hand.
I value your opinion.
She strokes his fingers.
Perhaps it's time we made love.
Yes?
Yes. That's what I thought. Have you got a French letter?
He looks blank.
A rubber thingy.
Lord, no.
Well.
She goes towards the bedroom and turns back at the door.
Just have to be careful.
Iris sits on the bed and kicks off her shoes. John puts the manuscript down carefully. He walks hesitantly into the bedroom and looks shyly at Iris as she rolls down her stockings.
I don't exactly.
Probably easier if you take your trousers off.
Yes. Yes, of course. I'm a rather late starter. My brother used to have to tie my shoelaces for me till I was seven. I don't know if...
I do.
Slipping her hand into his trouser pocket.
It'll all go.
He gulps.
Swimmingly.
Both naked, they leap into the river. At home, John struggles with Iris. He storms into the kitchen, slamming the door. Her fists clenched, Iris covers her ears. She crosses the room and looks fearfully through the glass in the kitchen door. John is leaning on the sink, weeping with despair. Iris scratches feebly with her fingers on the glass. John looks round and sees her pathetic face. He opens the door. She mouths, sorry.
Please don't, Iris. You have nothing to be sorry about. It would be unfair, and I couldn't bear it. We should be saying sorry to you. And not just sorry, but...
He sits her down on the sofa.
Shall I read to you? Shall I?
He picks up a book.
Occupied in observing Mr. Bingley's attentions to her sister,
Elizabeth was far from suspecting that she was herself becoming an object of some interest in the eyes of his friend. Mr. Darcy had at first scarcely allowed her to be pretty.
I wrote.
Yes, my darling, clever cat. You wrote books.
Books. I wrote.
You wrote novels. Wonderful novels.
I wrote.
Such things you wrote. Special things. Secret things.
Iris stares into space with tear-filled eyes.
Do you know many secrets now, Iris?
The hospital.
You have shown me a map of Iris's brain world, empty. Tell me that its hidden mysteries and all the unknown life in there has gone, has been wiped. How then can she say things of such a terrible lucidity? Which bit of the empty jungle does that come from?
We don't know.
But we, you don't know. Don't hide, please. Is it not remotely possible that what Iris says is of some consequence, yes?
Yes, perhaps.
So perhaps we ought to learn her language before the lights go out, what?
The lights will go out.
Yes, of course they will. You all keep telling me, us, that. I know that. She may even know that herself.
Iris!
Iris runs over a grassy ridge onto a pebbly beach.
I'm sure you can write it. Just get one word down. Persevere. Iris, your notebook.
John stops to pick it up, then hurries after her as she makes her way down the steeply shelving beach towards the sea. She reaches the water and walks straight into it. John catches up with her and takes her arm. He draws her away.
You walk? You read? Paddle in the sea? Then you'll write just like the old days.
He leads her across the pebbles towards a row of bright beach huts. A young woman sees them approaching.
Iris, Mama.
Janet and her family greet them enthusiastically. Janet kisses John, and then Iris, who ignores her friend, imitating the sea.
Yes, Iris. Sea. I thought we'd walk, calm her down a bit. She has an idea for a novel.
Hello, Iris.
Hello, Iris.
Talk to her, Janet.
Hello, Iris. Sea's a bit cold for swimming. Stay as long as you like. There's plenty of room. You're not to worry.
Oh, I don't want to be
No, you're not. As much of a mum as anyone, give her a bit of a rest.
She can't rush around these days, John. Tummy trouble.
Is she ill?
She gets tired easily. She's really not.
Iris breaks away and runs towards the water.
What do we do?
Just talk to her. Say things to her that she can write. She can, you know.
Janet's daughter watches sadly as Iris wanders down the beach. She sits alone on the pebbles facing the sea. Iris slowly opens her notebook and carefully tears out a page. She holds up a cheap biro and looks at it. She stares at the sea. Iris puts the blank sheet of paper beside her on the stones and weighs it down with a pebble. She sighs, then turns her head sharply and looks behind her for a long time. Smoking a cigarette, young Iris is working in the beach hut. She picks a flake of tobacco from her lip and brushes her hair away from her face. Looking up from her writing, she takes a drink from a half-pint glass. She smiles as she sees young John on the beach buttoning his shirt.
It's all right, is it, John?
Young Janet focuses her camera.
You know, it'll get better as you get to know each other better.
He poses for a photograph.
Iris has got more than one world going on inside her head. A secret world.
Not until another book comes out.
I'm the only friend that knows of her secret world.
Oh, John.
No, it's like living in a fairy story. I'm the young man in love with a beautiful maiden who disappears into an unknown and mysterious world every now and again. Who always comes back.
He takes off his glasses and picks up goggles and a snorkel. Young Janet's two little daughters run to the hut. Wearing flippers, corduroy trousers, his cap and a raincoat, young John puts on the snorkel and goggles and marches straight down the beach towards the sea. Iris smiles at Janet as, without hesitating, John flops forward into the waves. The present. Iris has surrounded herself with sheets of blank notepaper, each held down by a pebble. She sits regarding her work. Janet takes photographs of Iris from the beach hut. In pain, she suddenly lowers the camera. Her face is pale and drawn.
Janet, are you all right?
I'm absolutely fine, John. I'm fine. I thought I'd get her to sign this.
Anything. Anything is fine. Just get her to write.
Does she know anything about her past? Her career, work, friends?
Something like a closed book. But it's there. I know it.
Iris spreads out more sheets of paper. She looks up as John and Janet walk towards her down the beach.
Oh, that's wonderful. Well done, Bush.
Good to see your book so well received, Iris.
Yes, wasn't it? You thought you'd never finish it, didn't you? I read her the reviews. I read you the reviews, Iris. You hated me doing it before.
Would you sign your new book for me, Iris? Like postcards, do it at once or you don't. Please.
Opening the book at the flyleaf, Janet holds it out. Iris takes the book and the pen and looks down at them. Suddenly, she flings the book violently away from her. She grabs wildly at the pebbles holding down the sheets of notepaper. Caught by the wind, they flutter away across the beach and drift towards the water. Later. Taking a shower together, Iris laughs with delight as Janet soaps her back. The sunlight shining through the window forms a halo around Janet's head. Iris stares at her friend.
I see an angel. I think it's you.
Evening. On the veranda of Janet's house, Iris makes an arrangement of pebbles and seaweed.
We're underwater now. There are some drugs, aren't there, Iris? They don't last long. When the friendly fog disperses, there yawns the precipice before you, doesn't it, Puss?
Iris looks at him vacantly.
They're beautiful.
Horrible, isn't it, Puss? Horrible. Horrible thing. You're there with your toes at the edge of the precipice.
Iris smiles.
You can say anything you like, as long as you make it sound like it's a joke.
Oh, don't, John, that's cruel.
That's where you're wrong. It's not cruel. It's nothing, because it's not understood. It's in her own world now. Perhaps what she's always wanted.
Iris glances towards Janet. Hiding her distress, she smiles warmly, takes Iris's hand, and helps her up.
Let's go in.
Wearily, Iris rests her head against Janet's shoulder. Her friend embraces her. A light breeze stirs John's white hair as he watches the two women moving to the music in a gentle dance. Gaunt and ill in the flickering candlelight, Janet closes her eyes for a moment, then clutches Iris more closely. From the kitchen, Janet's daughters gaze silently at the scene on the veranda. Iris stops dancing.
When do we go?
Tearfully, Janet looks across at John. Exhausted, she leans her head on Iris's shoulder. Iris smiles and puts her arms around her. The lights of a tugboat move past on the dark water. A coach draws up at a bus stop on a deserted country road. Iris gets up from a bench and John picks up a holdall and a suitcase. Janet kisses Iris goodbye.
Chin up, John.
She kisses him and he follows Iris onto the coach.
Janet.
Yes, Trish. Yes.
John settles into a seat with Iris beside him as the coach draws away. Standing at the bus stop with her young granddaughter, Janet looks sadly after them. She sinks down onto the bench and wearily draws her hand down the side of her pale cheek. At home, Iris comes downstairs.
Now.
Seeing her reflection.
Who is it? Hello? Are you there?
Upstairs, John wakes.
Where is this?
So enchanted. John stares at the ceiling.
How much is that door near the window? The one with the waggly tail. How much is that door near the window? I knew of that door before the sale.
In the pub, Morris catches young Iris's eye.
Sing another song. Sing a mother's song.
Iris shakes her head. Hearing Iris singing, John gets out of bed and goes stiffly downstairs. John sits wearily on the bottom step.
Gives my soul all its joyous elation as I hear the sweet lark sing in the clear air of the day. Dear thoughts are in my mind and my soul soars enchanted as I hear the sweet lark sing in the clear air of the day. For a tender beaming smile to my hope has been granted, and tomorrow he shall hear all my fond heart can say. Try hear the sweet lark sing.
John gets up as he hears Iris urinating onto newspaper. He finds her slumped over the table in the neglected sitting room.
Come, gentlemen. We shall have to do better than this.
Gently, he takes her hand and leads her over the books and papers littering the floor. and out into the hall.
Aren't you a bad cat?
He helps her up the cluttered staircase.
Teletubbies!
Morning.
Morning. Oh, thank you. Thank you. Bye. Tony the postman.
John looks into the sitting room where Iris is staring at the TV.
Tony the postman.
Tony the postman. Tony the postman.
Iris gets up from her chair. John has returned to his typewriter at the kitchen table. As he concentrates on his work, Iris goes out into the hall and opens the front door. Cautiously, she peers outside. She steps out of the house. John looks up as he hears the sound of traffic. He finds the sitting room empty. He runs outside and looks anxiously up and down the road. Young John and Iris are cycling down the country lane.
Remember Proteus!
What about Proteus?
I'm like Proteus. You've got to keep hold of me the way Hercules kept hold of him. Even though he changed into a lion. And a fish. And a snake.
Gripping the steering wheel, John drives his car through the rain, down a road beside a boathouse. He looks up and down the deserted, fast-flowing river, now swollen with yellow floodwater. The rowing boats bob silently in the rain. Increasingly desperate, peering through the windscreen in the busy centre of Oxford, John makes a dangerous U-turn in heavy traffic. At home, a young policewoman looks at the spilt food on the sink and the filthy gas stove.
I'm worried about the river. We swim.
She looks around the kitchen.
You never know, sir.
She notes the table, covered with unwashed plates and open packets. Upstairs, she peers into Iris's study, at the books and papers scattered over the floor, the overflowing waste paper basket. She puts her hand to her mouth in disgust at the state of the bathroom and goes downstairs.
I have, of course, looked everywhere here already.
John closes the front door. Looking lost and tired, he gently rubs his stomach as he wanders slowly into the cluttered sitting room and sits pensively at the table littered with books. Young John speaks earnestly to young Iris.
Everything you do, everything you say, write, you do it superbly. And you're always going to, all your life, whatever you turn your hand to, I know it. And I know you must feel that I don't belong in your world.
Wearing socks and down-at-heel plimsolls, Iris is tramping towards the bypass along a muddy verge. The hem of her long skirt is damp with rain. Lorries flash past as she stands on the side of the road. A street busy with shoppers. Iris dodges under the umbrellas of the passers-by. She is wet through, her hair plastered down over her forehead, the long sleeves of her misshapen cardigan stretched down over her hands. Looking neither to right nor left, she marches purposefully across the road. Reaching the crowded supermarket, Iris hurries along the aisles. John hurries to the front door.
Between the soup and the baked beans.
Thank you so much.
I caught her before she got to the checkout.
She's been gone for hours. I thought I'd never see her again. Never.
Well, all's well then.
Please, do tell me your name.
I'm Morris, John. Iris's friend. I was a witness at your wedding.
Oh.
Well, I'm late for a meeting.
Morris, so sorry.
So sorry.
Iris puts her hands together and bows like a geisha. Surprised, Morris does the same, then quickly leaves. John helps her inside. In the hall, Iris treads on a crumpled drinks can lying on the filthy carpet. She picks it up and sits on the bottom stair, playing idly with the can. John leans towards her and looks into her face.
Were you trying to get away from me? Did you want to leave me, Iris? Please.
With no comprehension, Iris smiles at him. John sits in the kitchen, staring into space. Young John peers through a crack in the door to young Iris's room. Iris is half naked. She sits astride a young man lying on the bed. Moving rhythmically, she arches her back. Quietly, John closes the door.
I feel as if I don't know anything about you.
And you know everything about me, then I'll be dead. He's a professor of ancient history.
They have a malign influence on you, I think. They all have, all your friends.
He's a teacher, a master of thought.
Oh, you talk, do you? You master thoughts together?
We make love, yes, but that's not the important thing. Then he goes home to his wife in London. Does it frighten you?
I feel that if I'm just standing in a long line of suitors waiting for a kind word.
I'll always give you a kind word. You must accept me as I am.
And I'm to be kept in my box or not kept at all?
Nothing matters. Except loving what is good.
Am I good?
Just keep tight hold of me and it'll be all right.
In bed, John turns to the sleeping figure beside him.
Who are you with now, Iris? Who is it?
He shakes her violently.
We're lost! We're lost! We're lost! We're lost! We're lost! Lost! We're lost! Justin Poojin! Justin Poojin! Justin Poojin! Justin Poojin! There is no reason for this, and if there is, I don't know it! I hate you, Iris, you stupid cow! I bloody loathe you, every bloody inch of you! All your friends have finished with you. I've got you now. Nobody else has you anymore, except your fucking best friend, Dr. fucking Alzheimer, with all his fucking gifts. I've got you now, and I don't want you. I've never known anything about you at all, and now I don't care.
He falls back against the pillow. Iris tries to comfort him.
I think it's time I told you about some of my friends. The people in my past, of my heart, and not.
Oh dear.
Young John puts down the manuscript. Sitting at the table, he picks up a pen.
Ought I to take notes?
There was a friend who was a student with me. He was not the first person I went to bed with. That was Harry. Then there was Roger, who wanted to marry me. And Oscar, who said he couldn't live without me. And Tom, who far too clearly could, but... So, the student friend I had resisted going to bed with joined the army during the war and promptly asked me to marry him for... He was certain he was going to be killed. Wanted me to have the widow's pension. Yes, I know they all said that. Anyway, I didn't want to marry him. But I did go to bed with him. I
thought that best before he went off to fight, because you never know. Anyway, he was killed. My student friend. And we weren't married. So, no pension. There.
It wouldn't have been much anyway. I know, because I had friends killed. Their wives got very little. They get very, very little. Is that all? I mean, roughly? What about the friends in your other world?
You know more about me than anyone on Earth. You are my world.
Moving towards him, she kisses him tenderly on the lips.
After all that, I rather hoped it might be time for me to get my kind word.
Smiling, she embraces him.
You don't need to do it on your own. Vale House is very good.
No,
you're exhausted, you know that.
Of course I am. It's something that we share. We're in a state of grace. I think we understand each other.
What do you think? I don't know. There's always help, if you need it.
Isn't any help for her? System Pujan.
What? Sorry? Sorry?
Nothing.
Putting some papers down on the table, the doctor walks out of the room. In the sitting room, John sits on the arm of Iris's chair. In the car,
Janet's dead, Iris. They want me to say a few words, but I can't think of it.
No. Janet's
dead, Iris.
John is driving nervously through thick fog. Now he stands in the pulpit of a small country church.
I miss Janet very much. I miss Janet because I used to store up funny things to tell her had happened to us. Things I can no longer tell Iris. Another friend visited us in Oxford overnight recently, and I found her cleaning the bath. I said, "Oh, please, there's no need." She said, "Oh, yes, there is. I want to take a bath."
Janet's daughter wipes away a tear.
I was hoping to be able to tell Janet that story. She would have enjoyed it. She would have laughed. I mean, I think.
The mourners stare at him blankly.
Anna Karenina, Tolstoy, you know, went on her way to the station to throw herself under a train, sees something funny which she thinks to tell Vronsky, her lover, about. We all do it. I do it with Iris and Janet, all our friends. But then Anna thought that she wouldn't be seeing Vronsky again because she was about to kill herself. You don't want to hear this. Janet didn't kill herself. But if there's one thing that would have prevented Anna from throwing herself under a train, that would be it. The thought of telling something funny to the man she loves.
He sees Iris sitting in the congregation.
The love is over.
She is lost in a world of her own.
Life will soon be over. That's all. Goodbye, Janet.
No, Janet! Janet! Janet!
It's all right, Janet!
Janet!
Going home, Iris grabs the steering wheel.
Wrong!
No, Iris!
Wrong driving!
Stop it, Iris!
Wrong!
No!
Driving.
Stop it, Iris!
John struggles with her. In a panic, Iris grabs the handle of the passenger door. It opens and she falls out of the car. John slams on the brakes. He runs back along the dark road.
Mouse! Mouse! My old mouse! My old cat mouse! Where are you?
Startled, he trips and rolls down a slope. Peering through the darkness, he sees Iris's still figure lying in the undergrowth. Fearfully, he crawls towards her on his hands and knees. He embraces her.
I love you.
He kisses her cheek.
Mouse, I know you do.
They lie side by side in the moonlight, gazing up into the bare branches of a tree.
I used to be so afraid of being alone with you. Now I can't be without you.
He gets stiffly to his feet and helps her up.
Let's get us home. And then there'll be tomorrow. And the next day. And the next. And on we go. Getting closer and closest together. Your ring. It's so worn now.
Where did you get it?
From a pawnbroker's.
I like things that are worn down. But where? Until they go.
Young Iris kisses John and they run down the pebbly beach towards the sea. Picking up handfuls of pebbles, they throw them high in the air towards the water.
Had a bit of luck. Usual thing, I'm afraid. Somebody's died.
Iris, did you have a smile for Dr. Gudgeon?
No.
Iris ignores them both.
No. So, the time has come. You knew it would, Professor Bailey.
Yes. She didn't have a smile for you today.
Yes. Well, we must make a start.
What do I do?
Nothing anymore.
The doctor takes John's pulse.
Bill House is a very friendly place, you know. I was surprised. Well, I mean, this is one of the best. More difficult to get into than, well, Eton.
Resigned, John gives a wry smile. A taxi draws up in the street outside the house. The well-built driver gets out of the vehicle. Taking a piece of paper from his pocket, he checks the address, then walks towards the front door. Inside the house, Iris is slumped halfway up the stairs. Wearing his cap and raincoat, John is leaning over the banisters, anxiously caressing her arm.
Taxi for Vile House.
Yes. The lady's on the stairs, but I can't get her down.
Sorry?
The driver steps into the hallway and speaks to Iris.
You're right, my love. We're going for a little drive. That's all right, isn't it? What's your name, then?
She turns to him.
Iris. All right then, Iris. You'll be all right, my love. Come on up, see Daisy.
taking her hands and smiling encouragingly. The burly taxi driver helps her slowly down the stairs and out of the house. Sitting in the back of the taxi, John grasps Iris's hands, gently stroking her fingers. Her grey hair unkempt, her face lined, her eyes unseeing. Iris stares vacantly ahead as the taxi travels through the streets of Oxford, passing the handsome buildings of the university.
Human beings love each other. In sex, in friendship, and when they're in love. And they cherish other beings. Humans, animals, plants, even stones.
She'll be fine now, won't you, Iris?
The nursing home.
You can visit any time you like. Come all day if you want to.
The nurse takes John's arm reassuringly.
Stay the night. That's all right. We can make arrangements for you to do that any time.
Iris wanders into a sitting room. Elderly men and women are lying on daybeds or slumped in armchairs around a television set. Iris dances down a bright corridor. Smiling serenely, she turns her face towards the sun. Sitting beside Iris's bed, John closes her eyes, gently stroking her cheek. A comforting hand grips his shoulder.
It was so quiet when she died. Do you know, I thought I wouldn't mind doing that myself. I had a joke to tell her. It wasn't a very good one, but she'd have laughed.
We need to believe in something divine, without the need for God. Something we might call love or goodness. As the psalm says, whither shall I go from thy spirit? Whither shall I flee from thy presence? If I ascend unto heaven, thou art there. If I make my bed in hell, behold, thou art there. If I take the wings of the morning and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, even there shall thy hand lead me, and thy right hand shall hold me.
In the bedroom, John takes two handfuls of Iris's underwear from a drawer and places them on the eiderdown. Lifting up a petticoat, he holds it for a moment, then buries his face in it. A pebble falls from the pillow. It drifts gently down through the water and settles on the riverbed.